Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Justice of the Supreme Court. I'm going to request 5 minutes to reserve for rebuttal. This is the case of State versus Paul Weber, and this is the, I guess, second time that this case has been in front of this court. It was heard back in 2009 on the charge of attempting carjacking first and attempted robbery first. At that time, this court ruled, affirmed the decision on the attempted carjacking first, but reversed the decision on attempted robbery first, and remanded that for a new trial below. That trial occurred, and he was convicted again, and we're back into this court on that charge. And I guess one of the issues becomes, I guess, as far as the state is bringing up, is whether the decisions that this court made in 2009 control this court today. One of the problems, I guess, developed is that the state, in their answering brief, indicated a statement of fact and put in a statement of fact that this court, in fact, had established back in 2009 in this brief. There's several problems with that. One of the problems is that some of the testimony that they claim was done did not occur in the second trial. There was no testimony from the New Castle County police officer, Bernard Ahmed, and he testified in the first trial, and in the statement of fact and in the answer, they claimed that this is what he said. That was never presented to this jury. Initially, there's other issues as far as what happened in the first trial and what happened in this trial. One of the things that come out directly is the fact that in this court's decision, what the victim, Mr. Nespal, testified before is that Weber had a unlit cigarette in his mouth. And it's cited in the Your Honor's decisions, and it's cited in the statement of fact. In this trial, he didn't testify to that. He testified that the cigarette was behind his ears. Now, the problem becomes is that when this incident occurred, the police were called. He then, within 15 or 20 minutes, was brought to a location where they had Mr. Weber in custody, and there was a show-up. And at that show-up, he looked at the person and says, "That's not the person who, in this case, is a robbery, who robbed me." The description that he gave basically said that the individual who had attacked him or robbed him did not have any facial hairs. Mr. Weber, at the time, had a goatee. There was an issue as far as what he was wearing. He claimed that he was wearing shorts and a blue T-shirt. Interesting, at this trial, Mr. Nespal testified that the person that he observed that wasn't him, he said, was wearing camouflage clothing and was not wearing a blue T-shirt, when, in fact, earlier he said he was. There was a video taken from the Shell gas station which captured the incident. And I think it's pretty clear that the incident itself was a matter of seconds. And it's not in good quality. It's grainy. It's hard to see at times. It's hard to see whether the person in the video has a goatee or doesn't have a goatee. At times there's a shadow, and times there's not. But this video was viewed by Trooper Hawk, who basically said in his mind that that was Paul Weber. The victim testified at trial, testified again that he didn't know who it was, that he didn't identify him in court or at any time, but the identification was simply based on the video and Mr. Trooper Hawk testifying that it appeared to be Mr. Weber. They let him go that night. They then went to the house the next morning and arrested him, and apparently took the blue T-shirt and the jeans which they believed he was wearing that night, and there was photographs of him as far as wearing this.
Mr. Romano, you have 20 minutes, and you haven't yet gotten to one of your 8 claims of reversible error. What would you say is your best claim of error, and then identify it?
Well, I think the best claim of error is the missing witness. Missing evidence instruction. In that, blue T-shirt, is that that was never preserved by the police. That was left go. And that was a crucial issue as far as the trial, because it was raised number repeated times in opening and closing and throughout that. He was wearing this blue T-shirt, but nobody had the T-shirt. The photographs from the police lineup, or when he was arrested, his mugshot, if you will, did not view a blue T-shirt. It looked like a gray T-shirt. It was not the same color. The argument became is that that's because of the lighting, whatever, but certainly if they had preserved that item and basically said, here's a T-shirt, it matches it, you know, the T-shirt that was in the video, that's fine. If it doesn't, then it's not him. They didn't preserve that, and there was no missing evidence instruction that was given.
I'm missing your point, but wouldn't it be better for the defense if the T-shirt and the mugshot right after he was arrested were a different color than the blue T-shirt?
And that's what we're saying, but they claimed it wasn't. The state claimed. And the jury. And, I mean, the problem is that they're relying the evidence on Mr. Naspoth that a robbery, attempted robbery happened by his words. But yet on the same token, they're saying, well, he was mistaken, he was wrong, because obviously the person had a goatee, but he said it didn't. So he was wrong on certain items, but not wrong on other items. The other problem in this issue was, if you look at the video, as far as what happened, in my view, and looking at it, it's clear that this incident first happened when he was in the car. He was getting out of the car. The individual approached. There appears to be some type of conversation. He gets out of the car. Now, at trial and his testimony, that didn't happen, that the first occurrence happened when, in fact, he was out in the back trying to pump his gas. When the person he claimed as Mr. Weber approached him, he says to him, he had a cigarette in the behind his ear, I hope you're not going to light that cigarette. He says, no, I'm going to take your car. I have a gun. And that was the first indication of the statements. But that certainly was not what the video showed. And it certainly wasn't, the other issue is that the state kept on arguing throughout the trial that a struggle happened between the two. And even though Mr. Naspoth testified, well, it was a sort of a struggle, it wasn't a struggle, and they kept on inferring that it was a struggle to the jury a number of times, and basically couching their testimony as far as to try to obtain a conviction. And the question becomes is whether there was sufficient evidence or not sufficient evidence based on everything. It's somewhat unusual in a sense because you have a victim that says, he didn't do it, that's not the person that robbed me. And you have a video and a police officer says it is the person. So you have a victim who testifies that it's not him, but yet there's this video. We then have the issue as far as the statements, as far as the voir dire questions, as far as the jury. Mr. Weber has been involved in this case, his own case throughout. He's been actively involved, both in presenting the briefing, presenting the arguments, presenting everything. At the time of the situation, there was issue as far as he was on medication. He wanted to present some type of defense for that. The state asked the trial judge, to give an instruction on mental illness and the fact that there might be evidence or mention of drugs over our objections. That was given to the jury the first thing. There was never any evidence of that to happen, but in our view, that prejudiced the defendant and prejudiced because obviously the concept was is that they're talking that he had a mental illness and he had a drug problem, when in fact there was no evidence of that. There were issues as far as, again, the identification of Trooper Hawk. And again, this court has to make the determination whether that is fair game or not fair game. If it's not fair game because this court has already made the determination, then so be it. If it is fair game because it's a new trial, then I believe that we have to look at the standards that were applied in the argument as far as the bigger standards and the other statements as far as when, what instructions and what view as far as a police officer can identify somebody, because he's giving his opinion as far as this is the person that's there. He's not expert. He's not trained. Certainly, he didn't view it.
But he's a police officer that had known the defendant since 1985. Is that correct?
Well, he made his first thing in 1995. That's because it was his arrest.
It's not
he made
a arrest. Police officer looking at a video, presumably of someone he's never seen before, and saying, in my expert opinion or in my lay opinion, the person in that video is the same person as the defendant. This is someone he knew.
He knew because he arrested him. He did not know him as a friend. He did not have a social gathering with him. He knew him from his arresting him or from prior experiences, prior criminal experiences. not...
Does that matter?
I think it does, because I think it creates a problem for the defense as far as, well, how do you know him? Well, I knew him because I arrested him. We can't ask that question, because the answer is, I knew him because I arrested him, which is prejudicial to us as well.
So you're saying that because the officer knew your client from previous arrests, he couldn't identify your client because you couldn't then ask him, well, how did you know him? Is that the argument?
No, I think the argument is that obviously the trial judge would have to make a determination whether it was a sufficient basis for that officer to testify that he identified. That being voir dire outside the jury as to how he knows him, why he knows him, how often he's seen him. And basically, after that testimony is done, the trial judge will make a determination, yes, it's sufficient or not. It's not sufficient for the jury to hear, because it's based on simply, you know, a few times that he's seen him through the 20 years. There's no indication that he continued to see him throughout, just because, I mean, if you take it to the extreme, he saw him 20 years ago and saw him the day of the offense. And certainly something within 20 years is not sufficient time for him to identify the individual. And Mr. Weber, of course, was sentenced to 25 years, and that's what he has, based on the conviction of attempted robbery first. Again, which is based on Naspol's testimony that he said, I had a gun, and also I won his car. Looking at the video, you can't determine there is a robbery or attempted carjacking or anything. And because the way this court has made the posturing of this case, in that the attempted carjacking was convicted and we went to trial on the first one, the jury did not know that there was another charge that he was convicted. It was simply the attempted robbery. We certainly couldn't tell them in that regard under the framework as what it was established. Certainly, if they heard both sides and both charges, they could have made a determination that, well, we find that there is attempted carjacking, but not a robbery. But if you look at the evidence that was presented, there is a number of different holes that are involved in this case. That the other problem that was in the issue is basically we attempted to resolve this case, and there was a plea offer that was extended to a attempted robbery second in 5 years. And basically that charge was going to be accepted. We had a meeting with the state, and the issue became that we felt that the 5 year would include the time served, that he already served credit time. The state's position that it did not count that. And then they increased their offer, I guess, to 7 years. We filed a motion to try to enforce that, but obviously that was denied, and it's part of the issue now. The other statement that was there was that basically one of the prosecutors said that that wasn't going to happen in 7 years because in his mind, Paul had gotten away with murder. And again, Mr. Weber has been here before. He was convicted of murder one time. That was reversed by this court. And in a retrial, he was found not guilty. But that has always come back as far as the situation with him, because he has a history with this court and a history with the state. But in our view, certainly the conduct does not require or entail 25 years, and there was insufficient evidence, and it simply, the court has to look at it, whether it was just or not just.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, James Wakely on behalf of the state of Delaware. Your honors, my intention is only to address the claims that Mr. Armuno addressed. If the court wishes me to address any of the other issues, I'd obviously be happy to do so. In terms of the missing evidence instruction, the evidence at trial was that on the night of the incident, Paul Weber was stopped at a Sleepy's wearing a blue t-shirt and jeans. That was testimony of Detective Spillian. After Mr. Naspo could not identify him or said he was not the person, they released Mr. Weber, and in fact drove him home. He was not arrested until the next day, at which point when Detective Hawk went to arrest him, found him in his underwear in his bedroom, and the officer went into the bedroom and grabbed the first items of clothing he found, which were a blue t-shirt and jeans on the floor. There was never any suggestion that this was the only pair of blue jeans and a blue t-shirt that he had, that there was anything distinctive about it, that there was, in fact, anything even remotely identifiable about it from any number of the innumerable blue t-shirts and jeans out there. There was no basis to preserve this, as the detective testified at trial. And simply put, there's just no basis to believe that it would have been in any way exculpatory, because despite the fact that there was a number of discussions over whether the t-shirt was blue or gray or green at trial, the jury had the video, they could see it, they had the detective's testimony that he thought the t-shirt was blue, and that was more than sufficient for the jury to render its conclusion. In terms of the prosecutor...
So your argument is, number one, there was no reason to believe there was a duty to preserve, but even if there was, there was no prejudice in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
By its not being preserved.
Yes, Your Honor. As to the prosecutorial misconduct claim regarding the word struggle, I believe this court used the word struggle in the opinion on Mr. Weber's first round here. And again, the jury had the videotape. If they did not believe it to be a struggle, it was their determination that controlled. Mr. Weber referred to it as a skirmish. State referred to it as a struggle. Certainly, from the state's perspective, those words are interchangeable. The sufficiency of the evidence, again, while the witnesses were different this time out, in this case, I believe Detective Spillian substituted, and I don't mean from the trial perspective in terms of someone was unavailable, but substituted in this case, he was there at the Sleepy's to identify Mr. Weber, or to hold Mr. Weber there, could identify his clothing. And testified that when he got there, he saw Mr. Weber wearing a blue t-shirt and jeans. And again, it was Detective Hawk identifying Mr. Weber on the videotape. The jury had the videotape. Detective Spillian said he was wearing a blue t-shirt and jeans. That's the substance of the evidence. And this court already found that essential evidence to be sufficient the first time out. And certainly nothing from the state's perspective has changed this time. If the court has no further questions...
Thank you.
The state will rest on its brief. Thank you.
The only thing that I'll add as far as the t-shirt in question is that they also had a photograph, a mugshot, of Mr. Weber with what appears to be a gray t-shirt. And there was a dispute whether that was gray or blue. The question was, the light changed or whatever. Obviously, if there was a t-shirt, that would clear the problem. If the shirt is gray, he didn't do it, I suppose, presumably. If it's blue, then he did. So if they preserved it, that would have been there, and that's the prejudice that certainly would be there because it was a key issue in the trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Please rise.